It has been, I've enjoyed receiving your newsletters. I don't know how many, three or four. I'm not sure if I've read them every time or got them, but appreciated the update you guys have sent. It's been fun to see kind of what you've been doing and what's going on at the Lion of Judah Academy. So we are glad you came back to share with us what's going on in the ministry. And we are praying for you, and we are thinking about you throughout the year and just want to support you and say thank you for living out your faith and as God calls you. So come and share tonight. We're excited to hear an update and report on your lives. Would you welcome Dan and Paula Schaefer?
Really thankful to be here again. We're really thankful for your support and your prayers as well. It really does mean a lot to us, and we really encourage you to continue praying for your missionaries and everybody that's, I guess, out in the workforce. But it really does make a difference. The last time we were here, we shared with you the thoughts and expectations we had of going over. Neither of us have ever left the country until then, so we really didn't know what it was going to be like, but we had a lot of people tell us what it was going to be like. But things, I guess we had our own thoughts of what we thought it was going to be like, but things don't always go as planned, and we found that out on our first day we arrived. So
yeah, it didn't take long. They thought we were coming a different day than we came. So we got to the airport in Tanzania, and there was no one there to pick us up. And so nobody really knows English, and we didn't know how to use, like, the bus or anything. So someone at the airport could speak English, and they thought they knew someone who knew the cousin of the director. So we sat there for about 2 hours, and then this cousin... Someone got a hold of him, who got a hold of Mtebe, the director. And the cousin actually ended up picking us up. And he just drove us to the city, 2 hours away from the school, and said, just stay in this place, don't leave. So we sat at this restaurant for about another hour or two. And then the director came and picked us up and said, well, you don't have anything in your house. There's no stove or fridge, so we better buy those so you have something to cook on. Dropped us off at this one place and said, get all the food you need for the next 2 months. We're like, oh my word, I don't know what to get. So we're kind of all like crazy, and because we're jet lagged and all that. But so we got home about 9 o'clock that night, ate supper about 9:30, and then finally got to bed. We didn't have any, like, tools, like, to eat with or anything, so Qatar Airways, you know, gives you plastic silverware, and for some reason we kept it. And we were really glad because we didn't have any silverware, so we used this plastic spoon to cook with and to share to eat for about the first week. So culture shock is definitely a real thing. The language is Swahili, of which we knew nothing, and there are a lot of greetings that are expected of you, especially for an older person. If you don't greet an older woman, she'll get very offended. So that happened sometimes. And then we're like, okay, we got to learn that one. So took a long time, but we did learn some Swahili, and that was a big help. Just different traditions, washing your hands before eating in a special bowl and how to do it correctly and all that. Cooking and eating the cooking part was difficult for me. There are like rocks and bugs in the rice and the beans, and the rocks are so small, and they said there were rocks in it, but I didn't think they were because I couldn't see them. So I just didn't clean it, and it was so crunchy. It's so bad. So eventually the native woman taught me how to clean it, and it takes a long time to cook, about like maybe 2.5 hours, 2 hours to cook supper. Just eating with our hands and eating the same thing a lot. The bugs that are on the PowerPoint are some termites that our mama fried for us to eat because the kids were just eating them this one day because they thought they were so good. So Dan thought he should go catch some and
try them.
Yeah. So we did, and they were kind of, I don't know, they tasted crunchy. So that was an adjustment. Shopping was a big ordeal because you have to speak Swahili to order to get anything, and they barter a lot in Tanzania, so they always give you a really, really high price. It's just how it is. And then you always give them a really, really low price, and then eventually you meet in the middle. But if you don't barter, then you're just going to pay the high price because they're not going to tell you. So just learning how that worked, I guess, and what things were worth in their money. You know, when he saw, this is $10,000, we're like, what? And that's actually only $6, but it's just strange at first. Washing clothes is all done by hand, so that was a bit different. It took us a long time, and my fingers kept getting all red. And eventually we got a mama. I think she's up there washing the clothes on the screen. And in African culture, it's common to have a woman from the village come and help you with cooking and cleaning. And she appreciated the work, and I appreciated her help. And she really helped me learn Swahili, too, because she only speaks Swahili, so it ended up being a really good deal and helped us a lot.
A little bit about the school. They call it Simbwa Yuta in their native tongue. And the school has over 600 students that are there, and probably 550 of them live on campus. There's some that come from the community, and they stay at their house in the village. But the rest stay on the campus. The school started in 2003 with 16 kids, and it was just for, there's a college that's right beside us, and it was just for the students of the college. It was for their kids because they would have to send their kids to the public school, and sometimes the teachers wouldn't show up, or the teachers would beat the kids, or they'd show up drunk. It's a really corrupt public school system. They started this school with 16 kids, and they really did well, and it just kept growing and growing. So over the next, I guess, 11 years, I mean, it just, people started coming from all over Tanzania. Some students come from Kenya, and they come from all walks of life. Some of them are very wealthy, and some of them are very poor. A lot of the local kids are poor, and their parents will come to the director and say, we'd like our kid to go here, but we can't afford to pay. And so he'll ask them, you know, what can you afford? And they'll work out a deal. And sometimes it costs about $300 a year to go to the school, and some of the students only go for only like $15 a year. But the parents are willing to pay what they can so their kids can go there, so he'll let them go. But other students come from very wealthy families, and because the school gets really good grades, their parents want them to go there. And it we even have Muslim children that come from Muslim homes mm-hmm. come to our school because it gets good grades. And the director tells them, "Well, we're going to be teaching a biblical worldview, you know, and they're going to get exposure to that," and they say that's okay as long as they get a quality education. So it's a really good outreach for us to really be able to reach out to the community and all parts of Tanzania. And the school also employs over 50 different people from the community. They'll come and use our equipment at our shop because the campus has electricity, but none of the village does. So we have a planer and some power tools, and they'll come and make things, maybe a table or a door for their house, or just different things like that. And so we get to interact with the community that way, and they also employ people to be masons, carpenters. There's a plumber we employ, and just different things like that. There's 40 national teachers that go to our school, that teach at our school, and it's hard to keep the nationals there because they know that if they work for a government school, they don't have to show up to work and they can still get paid. And when they come to our school and the director tells them, you know, you have to show up to this, you have to go to devotions in the morning, there's certain requirements, and you have to show up to your classes, they'll go for a little, and then, of course, it's always, yes, I'll do this, and I'm so thankful for the opportunity, but whenever they get into it and they realize how much work it is to prepare for class and stuff, they leave, and so we cycle through teachers pretty regularly. But there is a core group of teachers that really want to see the kids succeed and that are really faithful and showing up. So, there are some that stay about, I don't know, a little over half that are pretty permanent teachers, but then the rest we cycle through. So sometimes the students will have a class that the teacher will be missing for because that teacher left. And so it's hard to fill those positions, but Paula gets to fill those pretty often. And then there's the director, him and Hart and Lynn Enloe, who started this school. He really holds the school together. He has a really big heart to see his kids take up leadership roles within the community, within the government. Because the government's corrupt, he wants just to see the kids, to, I guess, show them a godly example of what leadership looks like, so that way that when they go out, they can fulfill these roles and be servant leaders and be godly leaders within the country. Just to give you an idea of how corrupt it is, the director built a market right outside of our campus, and it was a pretty big deal for the community to have a market in town, so a lot of politicians came for the opening of the market, and the director gave a speech. And before he gave the speech, they had to look over it, and he had to take out all the financial stuff he was going to mention because they charged twice as much to build things like that, and they didn't want the people knowing what it really costs to build a market. So they made him take all the financial stuff out. It's just an idea of how the politics works over there.
When we went over initially, I thought I would be teaching music, and when we got there, it wasn't really set up like I assumed it would be in my, I guess I just student taught and everything happened pretty methodically here, and there wasn't like a class set for music. I just had to kind of set everything up myself, and I didn't know that or understand how it worked. So it took a long time, and it was frustrating and difficult. But eventually, I was able to teach general music to 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. And that was so rewarding. The kids, all of the people over there actually, just love to sing. They could sing all the time. They have 2 to 3 hour church services every Sunday. And they sing for the first hour, kind of, and dance. But they don't know how to read or write music. So it was really cool just to see how what they already knew could be applied to learning how to read and write. And like Dan said, the problem with the teachers, a lot of times there's vacancies. And a couple months in, I was teaching music in sixth grade once, and they didn't have an English teacher. And Mtebe, the director, said, "You know how to speak English. You can also teach English." I was like, oh, okay. You know, I thought I should probably have a degree for that, but oh well. So I taught English to sixth grade every day, and that was really growing for me because I didn't know what I was doing, really. And it was good. It really was good. It turned out well. And then I was going, and after English, you know, the next period, no teacher came, and I would ask them, and, oh, we don't have a teacher for that. We don't have a teacher for that. Oh, that teacher doesn't come. And I found out they were just sitting in their classroom, like, a lot during the day, and there was no teachers. There were no teachers coming. So I started teaching them some other subjects. I taught them computer in our computer lab, which had 7 computers, and 4 of which were working. And there are 40 kids in each class. So I took them all down to the computer lab, and the teachers were thinking that I was crazy. But the kids felt so proud of themselves because even the teachers don't really know how to type correctly. They would ask Stan and I to type their exams for them sometimes. So the kids felt so empowered to be able to type, and they loved that class. I also taught religion sometimes at the end, and then vocational skills, which is just, I guess, a random subject that they have. It's like home ec or something, like painting pottery and raising livestock and cooking. And I thought, oh my word, I'm not teaching cooking to these kids. I don't know what to do. So I was just imagining them all around this huge fiery pot. And so we decided to raise chickens. And so we raised 100 chickens with sixth grade. And Dan will talk about that later. That was a big, it was great. It was really hard sometimes because we didn't know what we were doing. But we did it, and I think it was a good experience. And then also I tutored some teachers and some students in music. And anytime we weren't at school, at our house, there were always kids there. They would ask us to bake them a cake for their birthday or something because they don't have a mom, because they're boarding students. So I baked 8 cakes, I think, 1 week. It was a long week. And just, you know, they cut their toe, or they have infection or something like that. They would come, and we would try to bandage them up. And so I guess being their mom was also kind of a job.
Some of the things that I got to do over there, I worked in the wood shop mostly. We built all the desks, all the chairs, doors, windows, tables, anything out of wood. We made that in our workshop. We do have a plumber, but if something would break and it wasn't very major, I would fix the pipe or, I don't know, fix clogged drains, whatever they needed me to do there. I also did some electrical for them, rerun some wires, changed out lights that the ballast blew in, or burn-up receptacles. I would change those, little things like that. And really, in a day, you really didn't know what you were going to do. I'd be working at the workshop, and someone would come and say, I have a problem with this, and you'd go fix it. And one day, I was working in the workshop, and the teacher comes to me, and he says, I have a problem. My students are locked in their classroom. It's like, well, how did you lock the door? Do you have a key? Yes, but I don't know where it's at. Oh, my. So I had to go get the door open, which actually happened quite a bit, surprisingly. I don't know how it happens, but it happened more than once. And then, as Paula mentioned earlier, I got to help the kids with the chicken project. It was a really good hands-on project for them. They grow local chickens over there, but it's just somebody buys a chicken and it runs around in their yard, and then,
or in our yard,
in whoever's yard, and then it'll lay eggs, and eventually they'll just keep getting more chickens, and then there's no real process. So we put a plan together, built a pen. We don't really know how to raise chickens, but we looked into it and tried our best. So we bought 100 chickens that would lay eggs, and we built the pen with the students, had them in different committees, and they would come and feed them and water them and change the bedding on the floor. And at week 6, all the kids went home for their break. They have a 1-week break. And I went out to the chicken pen, and the chickens weren't moving. And I thought, oh, no. But I couldn't go for medicine that day. I had to wait until later to go into town. So I went in as soon as I could, and I got back. But unfortunately, at the end of the week, we only had 19 chickens left. And when the kids got back, I felt so bad. But they thought we ate them. I said, no, that we didn't eat them. They died. But the next week, they did a paper on disease prevention. So it turned out okay. And but it was still a good project, and it was still a good learning experience for, mm-hmm. for both them and us, really.
So, and the 19 chickens are still there, so.
Yeah, then they're still, and hopefully they're laying eggs still. And also, there was missionaries that were there before us, and they left, and we came right after them. He was a gym teacher, so he took care of all the sports for the school, and he built them a basketball court and managed all the sports balls and the sports equipment they had. So we got to take over his role of managing the sports equipment, and we really didn't know what that would entail at first. He just asked us to keep it. Well, the first weekend we had it, kids come knocking on our door at 5:30 in the morning on a Saturday morning, and it doesn't even get light out until 7 o'clock. It's like, oh man, we got to do something about this. So we made some rules, and you know, you can't knock on our door till 7, and you can have sign out the equipment at this time, and you have to return it every day. That way, it doesn't end up missing, and different things like that. But so we get to take care of that. And really, we just get to do whatever needs done. If the director wants me to design something for him, I'll design some tables I designed for him, different furniture, and a building. And so I just pretty much do whatever they need me to do. Some of the blessings and challenges of being over there. One of the blessings is limited regulations. So the school grew so fast, there was 2 dorms, a boys' dorm and a girls' dorm. Well, they were bigger. There was more kids than we could fit in the dorm. So all the little students, they moved into 3 teacher houses off campus. And they needed to build a children's dorm. So as soon as the funds came in, we didn't have to get a permit or anything. We just drew out plans, decided where to put it, and the building went up in 2 months. So things can happen fast when you need them to happen. And it's really a blessing to be able to do that. Another blessing is religious freedom. We don't have to be as politically correct, and we can share our faith openly over there. There's not so much persecution in Tanzania as in other countries of Africa. It's a real blessing to be able to do that. And to, like I said, there's Muslim students that we have at our school, and we get to share Christ with them. Mm-hmm. And that's a really big, blessing. As far as the community, it's a very relationship-focused community. So if you're walking along the road, as Paula said earlier, if you pass somebody, you're expected to greet them. And if you don't, it's considered rude. And then if they want to stand there and talk for an hour, you're expected to stand there and talk for an hour, because that's the most important thing at that time is that person. And so, I mean, if you have something planned, like I want you to show up for your piano lesson at 7, and they got talking to somebody and they didn't show up till 8, that's just the way it is, you know. So you have to get used to that. And really, we just feel that there's a lot of needs to be met over there that God equipped us with the skills to meet. We feel like we're right where He wants us, I guess, at the time. And there's just a lot of things that He's prepared us for that we could, the role, I guess, we could fulfill. Some of the challenges of being over there is there's not a lot of entertainment for the kids. So if you play soccer or basketball, you could do those things, but if you're not into sports, you just stand around and talk. And quite often, their chapel time becomes their time of entertainment, because they have a microphone and there's a keyboard in there, and you can play demo songs on it. And you have to remind them, like, this isn't a time. When you come to chapel, it's not a time to hang out with your friends and be crazy. It's a time to worship God. So that's one of the challenges we face with entertainment, I guess, over there. With, you know, here, kids are maybe over-entertained. There, they're kind of under-entertained. It's a crazy situation. Another challenge is the perspective of leadership. The director is a great example and a great servant leader, and he really reaches out to his community. But it doesn't seem to rub off or stick to a lot of the other teachers. When they get put into a leadership position, instead of helping somebody that's underneath them, they'll just sit and talk and expect somebody else to do it. Like, well, I put you in charge of that, now I expect you to do that. I'm just going to sit over here and talk. We were broken up into different committees for one graduation, and there was a decoration committee. And I went out to the decoration committee to help them decorate, and all the teachers were just sitting in a circle talking, and all the students were decorating. So I helped the students. And then I went over to the food committee to help them. And they were carrying pots and pans, getting ready to prepare the meal for their graduation. And we started picking up pots and pans and carrying them, and the teacher that was in charge of that kept walking with us and walking with the students, but he would never pick anything up. He just kept walking back and forth. And they just have this idea that, you know, I'm in charge and I shouldn't lift a finger. So It's kind of a skewed perspective, not very biblical of being a servant to the people. And another challenge is reacting to the teachers and students. Quite often they'll ask for things, and while it's rude to just say no, you have to be careful how you go about addressing what they're asking for. They'll come and ask us for, you know, cameras or phones that they want us to get them. And the first month we were there, we had a teacher over visiting us, and I have an iPad that I communicate back to the States with, and that we email on that and everything. And he saw that, and he said, "Oh, I think you should give that to me." I was like, "Oh, that's tricky." I was like, "No, this is a tool that we use to communicate back to the States. And if, you know, I don't have it, then I can't communicate." And he's like, "Yeah, but I think God sent you here to give that to me." I was like, "Oh, man." So sometimes it's pretty challenging to not be offensive, but still say, "No, I don't think that's why." One of our biggest challenges is the language. While we're on campus, they're required to speak English. All the teachers teach in English, and the students can speak English, but as soon as we get off the campus, everything's Swahili or their tribal language. And we can speak Swahili enough to get around and carry small conversations in certain areas, but we can't have a real in-depth conversation. We can't really reach out to the community so well verbally. We get to do things for them, but we don't get to interact with them, talk to them a lot, because we just can't understand each other. But we're hoping to go to a language school our next break while we're over there and learn Swahili. So,
some of the projects that we have started and are ongoing, one of the first things we noticed was they don't have any resources for music. I can't remember. I think it was here that we were talking a little bit about, like, what would I use to teach with. It ended up I pretty much just use my tuning fork, and they have a chalkboard in every classroom. But there's no, like, recorders or drums, or there is a keyboard, but it's missing most of the keys, so I didn't really use it. And so what Dan was saying about, like, people asking for things, they do have legitimate needs, so the hard part is trying to find how you can legitimately meet their needs in a way that can help more than just one person for long term. So we prayed about that for a long time and thought that God was asking us to start the construction of this, of a classroom that would be used for teaching music in one part and teaching art in the other part, and then have some space for storage where it would be a safe place to store musical instruments and art supplies. So we thought we're just going to start it and see where God takes it, and so we did. We had the foundation laid and there are windows made, and so as people give money towards that project, we're just going to keep building it and see where God takes it and what he wants to do, I guess. And I never did talk about the reading program, did I? I started a reading program while I was over there for K through 2, and I was teaching it when I was there, but one of my goals is to get the high school students to start teaching it, because like Dan said about leadership, it's hard even for the high school students to have a desire to reach out and help the younger students, and I'd love for them to have that initiative and feel what it feels like to help help people that are younger than them, and the little kids really look up to the older kids, just like all little kids do. So that's something I hope to transfer to their responsibility when we go back. And the music program, I'd love to start teaching the high school students because I'm not teaching them right now. And I thought I would do that by starting a choir for the high schoolers because they love to sing. But in their choirs, they have usually 3 or 2 people singing and then everyone else is dancing. So I love for it to be like an American choir and for them to be able to experience that. And one more aspect of the music, across the country they can't read and write music, so their hymnals are, we have one on the back there, it's on our table, it's called Tenzi Zarahoni, and it's like this thick and about this big because there's no music in it, it's just the words to the songs. So they just have the songs, like the melodies memorized in their heads, And sometimes it's different. You know, the same song is a little bit different on Monday than Wednesday. But my personal goal is to get the music put into the hymnal, to start dictating out the song. So I've started that, and we'll see how fast I can do that, I guess.
Some of these projects are underway, and some of them are future projects that they're going to continue to work towards. One of those is a vocational building. The director really wants to have a place for the students to come and learn the hands-on trades, the carpentry, plumbing, electrical, masonry, and even farming. One of the things, once the students, if they don't pass their end-of-the-year exam to continue on to the next grade, they're pretty much done, and they go home and do whatever their parents do, really. If they're fishermen, the kids will just help their parents fish or farm. So it really wants to open up this trade school to get those students back in to learn trades and be able to do more than just, the family business. They farm little plots of ground around their house, but there's no, like, major farming or anything like that. Large acres, and he would like to introduce them to, different things in agriculture, as well as the trades. He also bought cows. He has 7 dairy cows, and he's working towards a school-sustained farm. We have a garden that he has people take care of, but he would like the students to help take care of the farm. There's goats, cows, chickens, and then they have 60 acres of ground, and I think 20 of them can be farmed. And he would like to start a school-sustained farm that the students can run and help pay for their tuition and just learn that. And the school-sustained farm, the cows he has, there's 7 of them. They're Holsteins, and they come from South Africa. And they right now they milk 3 gallons at their peak milking a day, which is very poor. And he asked me to look into that and see what I can do to help them milk more. So I looked into what Kenya does for their cows, and I made up a recipe, and I fed it to the cow for 21 days. I had feed for, and it got real shiny and it looked healthy. And you could tell it from the rest of the cows which one was getting fed, but it didn't produce any more milk. But he would like that to be another project that the students can take over, and they can supply the school with milk, because that's mm-hmm. pretty rare while it's over there too. Mm-hmm. Some of the things you can pray for us pray for us for direction in the future. We know what we're doing for the next 15 months. And we really want to continue some of the projects that we started while we were over there the first time. But we don't know what we're going to do once our visas run out in June. And we're not sure if we're going to come back, if we're going to stay longer, if we can renew our visas, and how long. He says each time the government really gets to state how long we can stay. So we don't know what that's going to look like. So you can pray for that for us. We'd appreciate that. And our funding, last time we were trying to raise $12,000 for the time we were there, our house set up and everything. And this time we want to try to raise the same amount of money, $12,000 for this next 16 months. And we're 3/4 of the way there. But just pray that we get what God wants us to have.
Mm-hmm. So. Also, just that we would have wisdom and good communication as we're finishing speaking up at churches. We just have next Sunday and the Sunday after until we go back, so it's getting so busy, just that we would be able to share what we need to share. And for safety and travel, as we go back, we haven't had any problems in travel, so we're really thankful about that. And just for wisdom when we're over there, to know how to love the people. Yeah, when you said about how we can love our neighbors and people around the world, it's really a struggle, because sometimes loving isn't always saying yes, and just knowing how we can really help them and teach them how to help themselves. We pray about it a lot over there. It's just hard to know what's best and what's wise. So please pray that we have wisdom and that God would use us however he wants to use us. There are a lot of needs, but that we would know which needs to, that he wants us to address, and that people would be able to see Christ through us, and that we could help them to see Christ through our lives.
We have prayer cards in the back table, and we have a display table down there, and we'd like you to look at that and take a prayer card. Like I said in the beginning, prayer really does make a difference, and
yeah.
We'd love if you'd pray for us. At this time, we can open up for questions.